This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. In addition to promising a border wall, despite a 40-year lull in northward migration, Donald Trump has now put in writing his decision to defund so-called sanctuary cities. There are dozens of such cities around the country, including major metropolises like Los Angeles, Chicago, and even Trump's residential city of New York, that count themselves as sanctuaries for immigrants. Those cities have adopted policies that broadly prohibit law enforcement from cooperating with federal immigration authorities in most cases. According to Press Secretary Sean Spicer, Trump's order will, quote, strip federal grant money from the sanctuary states and cities that harbor illegal immigrants, quote unquote. Mayors of several sanctuary cities have already fired back that they will stand firm. On the state level, California Governor Jerry Brown in particular strongly reiterated his commitment to protecting undocumented immigrants. My guest is Jessica Karp Bunsell. She is the litigation director with the National Day Labor Organizing Network. Welcome to the program, Jessica.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, explain sanctuary cities a little bit better than I did. I mean, there's no one specific definition, but I understand it's a term that's used to broadly refer to those cities who, in most circumstances, wouldn't turn over an undocumented person simply for calling 911, say, right?
Yes, that's right. It's a broad term, and it encompasses a broad range of policies, everything from general statements of welcome towards undocumented immigrants to specific policies limiting the use of local resources to help deport residents.
So is in a city like, say, Los Angeles, one of the ways in which it meets this definition of sanctuary city is that the LAPD is prohibited from turning over an undocumented person involved in any kind of a case to immigration authorities. Of course, there are exceptions, right? In the case, I understand, of suspects in violent crimes.
Yeah, each locality has different policies. Some have exceptions, some do not. I think one thing that is creating some confusion around the term sanctuary cities is that some localities simply refuse to detain people for immigration enforcement. And part of the reason for that is that federal courts have found that a request from immigration to hold someone in jail without anything more, without probable cause, without any oversight from a judge, does not comply with the Constitution. You cannot hold someone just because a single officer asked you to do so. And so many jurisdictions don't comply with ICE detainer requests because they're trying to comply with the Constitution. And, you know, even President Trump cannot deny funds to a state or locality for complying with the Constitution.
Right. So let's talk about what it is he can do. It's not that the federal government currently funds the offering of sanctuary to undocumented immigrants. Basically, Trump, it seems like he wants to use a stick approach to undermining the idea of cities declaring themselves sanctuary cities. So the federal government, of course, gives grants to municipalities, cities, states for various programs. And it's those that he is holding hostage, with the exception, interestingly enough, of law enforcement, grants for law enforcement. Those will remain untouched. But apparently the kinds of things that could be impacted are, you know, things like shelters for homeless folks and, you know, any other kinds of, you know, lead abatement programs. Jessica, can he actually do this as far as, you know, does he actually have the legal authority single-handedly to take away these federal grants?
I think the simplest answer is no. I think there are two important things to know. One is the reason the president is trying to do this through federal grants is because he cannot directly tell local or state police what they need to do with their time and resources. The state is separate, obviously, from the federal government. It's not simply an agency of the federal government. And the Supreme Court precedent clearly establishes that the federal government can't what they call commandeer local officials to enforce a federal program. So the president is trying to get around that by conditioning funding on locals turning people over for deportation. But the Constitution also restricts his ability to do that. And in one way that goes to exactly your question, Congress cannot condition funds that have nothing to do with a federal grant on receipt of that grant. So they cannot, for example, condition funding for hospitals on assisting with deportations. That is not within the president's authority.
So basically, this is yet another sort of fantasy that the Trump administration has sold to Trump's supporters, that he is basically appearing to try to fulfill. Then he can turn around and blame, I don't know, what, the Constitution for standing in the way of him making his voters' dreams come true. Let's talk about the pushback from mayors, from governors like Jerry Brown. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel made a very strong statement as well. Are you heartened by the pushback from these state and city level elected officials?
We are, and we're particularly inspired by the pushback from the California legislature. The president of the California Senate, Kevin De Leon, has sponsored an incredibly important bill, the California Values Act, SB 54, which says quite clearly California is not going to use its state or local resources for deportations. And he, like many others, responded to the president's orders yesterday by pointing out that the president simply cannot constitutionally condition all funding on helping to deport California's residents. You know, we certainly commend that. And we think in some ways the president's executive order demanded that because he, in addition to threatening sanctuary cities, has revived an entirely discredited deportation program, Secure Communities, which was scrapped by the Obama administration because all these state and local officials stood up and said this program is harming the safety of our residents. It is creating a wall between the police and our immigrant communities, and it is making it impossible for us to do our jobs. The Obama administration heard that, and they rescinded the program. Trump has just said that he's bringing it back, and by doing that, he's really forcing this confrontation. And I think we're actually going to see a lot more cities and a lot more states come out and say, you know, we cannot participate in this, and we, you know, are going to also stand up with California, with New York, with Chicago, and declare ourselves to be sanctuaries for our residents.
And also, let's remember there's a very practical reason as well from a, you know, law enforcement and public safety perspective why you wouldn't want to mix up law enforcement with immigration enforcement. If you have an undocumented person who witnesses a crime, they're not going to step forward to report that if they worry about being deported simply for, you know, expressing that they've seen something bad happen. I mean, police officers, I imagine, would want undocumented immigrants to be able to report things free of fear from deportation. That improves public safety, right?
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, one of the studies that I think contributed to the decision to cancel Secure Communities was a University of Illinois study that conducted a poll and found that large percentages of Latino residents, even citizen residents, folks who lived in mixed status families and other folks, felt less scared, basically, to call the police if they didn't see a clear division between police and immigration enforcement.
Right. I mean, your mother could be undocumented and you would worry that calling the police might bring immigration authorities to your doorstep and end up with her having to be separated from your family. I mean, there's so many issues. There's not necessarily just about let's reward people for, quote, breaking the law, to use the kind of language and logic that a lot of the anti-immigrant forces often espouse. Let's also talk about this idea that undocumented immigrants have high rates of violent crime among them. This is an idea that Trump has very much used to whip the flames of anti-immigrant sentiment. Among the things that he did during his campaign was tour with this group of so-called angel moms. And now, as part of this executive order or linked to it, he is announcing, his team is announcing that very soon they're going to start some sort of registry of people who have been victims of crimes committed by undocumented immigrants. I know he cited the case of a young woman in San Francisco who was suspected to have been killed by an undocumented immigrant. How scary is this, you know, approach to this issue?
It's really nothing short of terrifying, because what the president is trying to do is to criminalize the entire undocumented population based on a small number of sensational stories and use those stories to basically describe an entire group of people who report after report has shown actually commit criminal offenses at a lower rate than the general population. And I think it's part of his campaign message, which is continuing in the first week of his presidency, and in some ways even becoming scarier, to criminalize and divide the quote-unquote other as undeserving, as scary, as a national security risk, as a threat to public safety, to justify then doing things that are horrific. I mean, he's going to be ripping mothers from their families. He's going to be bringing back, huge workplace raids. One of the things the executive order does is to triple the size of immigration and customs enforcement. Basically, Trump is creating his own police force that he's going to use to go after the 12 million undocumented people of this country. And I think that is going to look very scary.
Okay, so let's talk about that. If indeed states like California, cities like Chicago and New York, et cetera, stand firm and say we're going to remain sanctuaries for undocumented immigrants, but you have these federal enforcement agents coming to do workplace raids, and now that force is being tripled, what sort of standoff are we going to see? I mean, how exactly will municipalities and states protect folks from these raids? Or is that out of the jurisdiction of calling yourself a sanctuary, that you're sort of helpless against things like workplace raids?
I think that's an important question, and it brings to light an important thing to understand about sanctuary cities, which is that sanctuary cities are not saying that they are going to stop the federal government from enforcing immigration law. They are simply saying that they are not going to participate in enforcing a policy that is harmful, in their view, to their own communities and to their own residents. So they are not going to instruct their officers to help the president deport people from their cities and their states. But sanctuary cities do not have the ability to control what immigration and customs enforcement does. That's a federal agency, and they're not trying to do that.
And we should, of course, remember that under President Obama, we had record numbers of deportations, and it was through secure communities that a lot of those deportations took place, and it ended up casting too wide a net and undermining this claim by the Obama administration that they were simply deporting violent criminals, when in fact it was much bigger than that. Let's also talk about the threats, if any, to DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, one of the executive orders that President Obama signed to offer temporary relief from deportation for a very specific group of young folks, young undocumented immigrants. His follow-up program, DAPA, for parents of naturalized immigrants has been on hold in the courts, and it looks like that's probably not going to emerge out of a Trump administration. But what about DACA? So far, Trump hasn't openly said anything about ending DACA. However, there was a draft of executive order leaked to Vox.com of an order called Ending Unconstitutional Executive Amnesties. So it's not clear what'll happen.
That's right. And I think that lack of clarity remains. I think there are certainly people within the Trump administration who have previously taken a strong position against DACA. Trump himself declared that he was going to rescind DACA, but it remains unclear whether he will follow through with that.
Isn't there a lot of support even from some Republican lawmakers for DACA and you know, for people whose constituencies include mixed status families?
Yes, yes, there certainly is. I mean, I think the program had broad-based support. And as you say, you know, what the program does is it allows people who grew up here in the United States, who are brought to the United States by their parents, who went to high school here, who went to college here, it gives them protection from deportation and the ability to work. And I think there is a broad-based feeling that this group of people should not be punished, should not be torn from the only country that they know, sent to places that many of them do not remember, and that while they are here, they certainly need to be able to work to provide for themselves.
There had been tensions during the lead up to DACA and, you know, this so-called Dream Act, that the interests and well-being of one group of undocumented immigrants might be taking away from other groups of immigrants, that basically lawmakers end up pitting one group against the other. With there being not, you know, some doubt as to whether DACA will be repealed, but sanctuary cities attacked, Jessica, is there a worry that those same tensions about one community being pitted against another will revive?
That's certainly a concern. And we saw that, you know, as you said, even under the Obama administration, there was a comprehensive immigration reform bill proposed, and it basically did make a, you know, trade-offs between certain groups of people. I think that the sort of extreme and rash actions that the president is taking are really opening people's eyes to the ways that kind of division opens a kind of dialogue that just can't be stopped, right? So, you know, under President Obama, he certainly said with the Secure Communities Program that they were going to focus on targeting violent criminals. That turned out not to be true, but that did in many ways set the stage for President Trump to come in and say, I'm going to deport criminals also. And when I say criminal, I mean, as he makes clear in the memo, anyone who has ever been arrested for anything, regardless of what happened to the charges, and anyone who has committed acts that constitute a criminal offense, even if they've never been arrested for that. So I think he shows the extent to which that term criminal can be used to demonize entire groups of people and sort of stretched until it basically has no meaning. And I think that's sort of opening people's eyes everywhere to the danger of trying to draw those lines. And I think more and more folks are saying, look, we cannot, you know, and this is the cities and the states that you've talked about, we cannot play any part in this president's deportation force.
Jessica, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for the National Day Labor Organizing Network.
Yes, it's www.ndlon.org.
ndlon.org. We'll post a link to it from our site later today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
Jessica Karp Bunsell is the litigation director at Andalon, the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.